Moving right along, breaking down all these Vikings draft picks. Today, we are talking about Ed Ingram here on the Locked On Vikings podcast.
You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome, welcome, welcome into another episode of the Locked On Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I am your host, your pal, and the kid you copied off in math class. My name is Luke Braun. You can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. And today's episode is brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online has you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. Bet Online, where the game starts. Today on the show is Ed Ingram. I have not talked about him on the field much yet. Today we rectify that, finally kind of got around to really getting into his tape and being able to have something more sensible than, I don't know, he's like seems to be a good pass protector, which is kind of all I knew, like in that weekend. I spent a long time talking about his off-field. We talked about it a little on the show. Mostly I put that time into an article that is out now. I'll link it in the show notes. I don't want that to just be a thing that I like mention once and like forget about, but it also wouldn't really be right to like repeat myself over and over. If you want to know my thoughts on that, read the article. But today we're going to focus on the tape and the on-field. So Ed Ingram, 59th overall pick. A lot of people said, you know, that's a reach, right? And I think it was a reach per like consensus, stuff like Grinding the Mocks and Arif Hasan's consensus board had him a lot lower. Those things composite Ed Ingram, including his off-field. And like, if somebody said, oh, I wouldn't take him before the seventh round because of this, that is going to drop the average quite a bit. So that's not necessarily that like he isn't a guard worthy of going in the second round. It's that he is, but there's this other thing. You could make the argument, and I think Arif Hasan makes this argument, that like, if the consensus board mirrors teams, you know, other teams might have dropped him too, and therefore the Vikings probably could have waited and still gotten him, and therefore it was a reach. I'm pretty sympathetic to that. That still makes a little more sense to me. But I think if it weren't for that off-field, I would probably push back on someone saying, yeah, he probably should have been a third or fourth round type guy. I do think he is a second round guy at guard, if you completely remove the off-field, which you wouldn't do, but if you did, I think his tape says that 59 is about appropriate for him. So, as for why, Jesus Christ, this mean streak. We hear mean streak with offensive linemen a lot. That is a common thing. But this is something more than just, oh, he's just got that nasty in him. It is a highlight reel. His tape is legitimately funny because he sends dudes ragdolling all the time. And the thing about O-line, though, I mean, an offensive lineman's highlight reel is not going to tell you nearly as much as his low-light reel will. I mean, this is basically the entire discourse around Garrett Bradbury, right? His highlight reel, his reach blocks, and all that really cool stuff is really cool, but people are going to focus on the bad, right? And I think that's just kind of the nature of O-line. So for me, I'm okay with saying, like, wow, this dude is really, really powerful and strong. And he plays with that strength, and he's got so much finish to him. Genuinely, playing against him looks miserable. I mean, you can see guys wear down as the game goes on, which I know is a big, like, trope, and you can't really measure it, but you just see, like, their body language. It just seems really, really unpleasant to have to pass rush against Ed Ingram all day. He just makes it not fun, and, like, that is awesome, right? One of my favorite feats was against Kentucky. He took a 314-pound defensive tackle, literally forklifted him, like lifted him with his arms off of the ground. This dude didn't jump, he got lifted, and then set him down one gap over. It was a reach block, but instead of me reaching your other hip, I'm going to bring your other hip to me. I've never seen that before. It's insane, the play strength that this guy has, that functional strength. When he pulls, which LSU did a lot of power, and a lot of gap stuff, but they didn't do a lot of zone, which a lot of people have a problem with this because the Vikings are a zone team and they're going to have combo blocking and stuff. I know that they mentioned that they're going to do a little more mid zone and less outside zone, which is a little more compact and a little bit less about getting out guys, you know, out in space, and a little bit less about speed and more about power. And that's fine. But he'll still have to do those, like, those zone blocking techniques, and he doesn't have a lot of experience in them. But in a power scheme, we can sort of simulate that by looking at when he pulls. You know, when he pulls out of the formation and then he has to go, like, block somebody on the edge. He's a battering ram, for one. I mean, that is awesome. Like, he would be the dopest fullback. He's just, like, find a guy, blow up a guy. He's great at that. And he can find him and you know, put him on the turf. Even on, like, imperfect bases and awkward angles that can happen there, he still is, like, out-muscling and winning those reps on strength alone. That'll get a little harder in the NFL where everybody's a lot stronger, but Ed Ingram has good NFL strength, like, above average at least NFL strength. He will still be stronger than a lot of his opponents, and that's really cool. On those pulls, I will say I want him to corner a little tighter. You know, you start at left guard. He played left guard at LSU, and you pull around toward the right tackle. And look, it depends on what shoulder you're trying to win. If you're trying to make a seam inside or outside or whatever, it depends on the structure of the play sometimes. But I do wish he was a little tighter about that. He can kind of get himself, his momentum going a little bit too fast, and then he'll go out too wide. And look, big guy like that, it's hard to change direction. So he can lose some reps that way. And that's sort of a general critique that I have of his play, is just the change of direction skills, that lateral mobility is just not very good. Like, he just is not a very good fit in a wide zone scheme. So I do think the scheme fit is a little bit weird, and he would probably be better on a team like the Colts or another team that runs power rather than a wide zone team. You know, a McVay disciple. There's a whole bunch more in my notes that I do want to get to here. But first, let me talk to you about Grambling. You can bet right now on all sorts of things with the Vikings, even though it's not the season. You can bet on their future win total. You can bet what place in the division. Will they be first or second or third or fourth? You can bet week one versus the Packers. You can gamble on that. You can also, of course, gamble on stuff like the basketball or hockey playoffs, WNBA, MMA, golf, tennis. You can even play your favorite Vegas casino game. So head on over to betonline.net. Get yourself a Grambling. Bet online, where the game starts. Thanks again so much for making Locked On Vikings your first listen of the day. Let me talk to you now real quick about some of the finer details of pass protection. Pass protection is really hard for me to evaluate. Like, I find myself going over plays over and over and over again before I kind of feel like I have a sense for what happened. It's not as simple as just counting up the times he gave up a pressure. And I kind of have tried to move myself away from that. And it's more about considering context and letting myself kind of say, well, you know, if the ball wasn't out so quick, would he have won the rep? That kind of stuff. Which is really important with LSU, which used a ton of quick passing, mostly because the rest of that offensive line was a catastrophe. They had all sorts of spacing issues and their splits were wrong all the time and communication issues. Hard to know if that was Ingram's fault or not, but, you can't really make a guess there, but it's kind of, you have to be a little speculative when you do offensive line, especially on the interior, about like, do I think that was his job or not? Or there are plays where there's too big of a gap between Ingram and the tackle, and the tackle split out way wide, and Ingram was kind of next to the center, and you kind of go, was that his fault? Was he supposed to center up between the guard and tackle, or the center and tackle a little more, or did the tackle just go out too wide? What did they rehearse? And unless you're in the room, you're never really going to know that. So you just have to, like, give a lot of benefit of the doubt, and just sort of find the ones where you kind of know what went on. All that said, when Ed Ingram is in a place where he has a large space to cover, when he doesn't have a lot, when he doesn't have like a guy on either end or help to either side, that is when he struggles the most. He's not very like laterally mobile. He is not shuffling very well. His feet aren't very active when he's, he'll kind of just set up a base and become like an unmovable pillar. But it's a lot easier to go around, impossible to go through him unless you get under him, which I'll talk about in a sec. But very difficult to go through him, way easier to get around him. And like in the UCLA game, he played the LSU-UCLA game, that was particularly evident where, you know, guys could kind of swim and spin over him and stuff. That's going to be very difficult against some of the NFL fronts that love to rush like way upfield. And some NFL fronts even love to rush two guys upfield like edge rushers, one at the tackle, one at the guard, and make the guard do tackle footwork. And that's like a way that they challenge a guard. And Ingram is going to be weak to that. What's nice is that is a context that's not very common for guards. Most of the time, a guard will be part of a pass protection wall, or at the very least, he'll be kind of doubled up with somebody, and he'll very often have help on the side of him, where you can kind of say, yeah, go ahead and spin. The center is shoulder to shoulder with me, and you're just going to spin right into his face, or even better, spin into the guy that he's blocking, and it's just going to be a clog of bodies, and nobody's going to get anywhere, which is what we want. So it's not a common context, but it is something I think he'll have to improve at to be like a good guard in the NFL. And for now, we just kind of have to accept that that's not really a place we can trust him. However, in all other contexts, I really like his pass protection. I think pass protection is a plus for him on the whole. Mostly, I like the way he uses his hands. He is very strategic with his hands. One thing you see young offensive linemen do a lot is flash their hands too quickly. They just want to get their hands on the guy, right? You usually want to be the one who strikes the first blow in pass protection, because then you can, you know, get the better leverage and you can get a better placement and a better setup and all that stuff. You don't want to be kind of angling for whatever room you can find after the other guy has his hands on you, right? But that is a mistake against defensive linemen that know that your hands are coming out and then they can use all their swipe moves and swipe them away. Ingram's very responsible about this. He's very, like, safe. And it's not passive. He's just very good at timing when he delivers that monster punch. And the punch just knocks people off. Like, so many times he'll do that punch and he'll get somebody off of their balance. And then he'll actually literally be able to just, like, drive them into the ground. And it's not holding, it's a pancake. And it's just a matter of, you can't do that too early. And I think that that is a lesson that Ed Ingram learned a long time ago, because he's really, really good at not doing it too early. And the other thing I really like about him is the way that he reacts to stunts and loops and stuff. This is the Dakota Dozier problem. The biggest problem I had with Dakota Dozier, there were many, but this is the one that bugged me the most, was on stunts, he got taken into too much deep water. I got the chance to speak with, previewing a Bears game a couple years ago, somebody who was like a scout team lineman on the Bears, who taught me about stunts and how you're kind of like, if you're assigned to block a defensive tackle and you see him go outside really hard, or if he like crashes really hard to one side, you're kind of supposed to say, okay, you're now the next guy's problem. And that probably means somebody's going to loop into this gap. So you're supposed to not get lured too far and stick with him for too far. Eventually you pass him off. Dakota Dozier would stick with him forever, and then a looper would come in free, unblocked, right away and sack Kirk Cousins. This caused a whole bunch of problems. Ed Ingram is very, very disciplined about this and does not get lured into deep water. He also, for all of the problems he has with lateral mobility, when he does get, you know, taken a little bit too far out and he has to go recover, he can get his hips flipped and accelerate the other way with a lot of explosiveness. So there is an athleticism and a flexibility there, and I think the lateral motion thing is, I just need to see him like shuffle a little more. I just want to make him shuffle all day until he's a lot faster at it. I think it's like a footwork technique thing that is much more fixable than an athleticism problem. So there's hope for that. But the way that he sees stunts, and he's very aware too, like you can see his eyes moving around. He does not tunnel vision on one guy. He sees guys coming. And he very often sees stunts coming. There are plenty of reps on his tape where a looper comes in and is supposed to attack him, and he stayed in the gap he was supposed to stay in, so the looper didn't get the gap he wanted, and then also that looper is like a 250-pound linebacker, and then he just dies. It's like, okay, well, yeah, you know, once you're to that point, now you have a 70-pound disadvantage, and this guy wants to harm you. So it's very much a positive. The only other thing I will say is he plays pretty tall sometimes. This is a very common critique of young offensive linemen, where they get their pads too high. If you ever heard the old adage, low man wins, he can often lose reps not being low man. And that's, he has ended up pancaked on the ground, super embarrassing style. You know, Drew Samia versus, who was that, DeForest Buckner a couple years ago, that kind of rep, that ugly low light, that'll happen, and it's because he gets his pads too high, and it's just a posture thing. I think I would want to reteach how he builds his house, and I want to teach him to have a little bit more of active feet in some scenarios, just so that he can be a little bit more reactive to more finesse-style rushers, to quicker rushers on the inside, you know, the Aaron Donalds of the world, and players like him. You know, I want to see, go up against Jalen Twyman all day, who modeled his game after Aaron Donald, right? Do that in camp and do a lot of footwork drills and stuff. And I think you can really complete what is already, I think, like an 80% complete pass protection skill set. And it's one I'm perfectly comfortable putting on the field if he ends up winning the job. I would not be concerned about him in pass protection, but I also wouldn't expect it to be elite or anything. It probably would be like a below average starter right off the bat, which is a good place for a rookie to be. I want to talk about one other thing in the run game. But first, let me talk to you about the best tasting protein bar on the planet. I've been talking to you for a while about their Built Puffs, which is like their marshmallowy version. Built Bar is a protein bar all covered in 100% chocolate or sometimes white chocolate. They're high in protein, they're low calorie, low sugar, low fat, and they're absolutely delicious. And then they have a marshmallow version, which tastes like marshmallow coated in chocolate, and they are coming out with a new flavor that is birthday cake flavored. I mean, this is degenerate stuff for what is supposed to be a relatively guilt-free snack, but it's birthday cake flavor. It rules, it tastes awesome, and I don't know how they do it and make that like a protein bar, but I honestly can't stop, man. I'm addicted to them. Head on over to Built.com, get yourself a box of whatever flavor, if you want the puffs, if you want something else, whatever you buy, use promo code LOCKED15, LOCKED15, you can get 15% off of your order. That's promo code LOCKED15 at Built.com. So there's one more thing that I want to make sure that I get to here, talking about Ed Ingram here in Locked On Vikings podcast, the sustaining issue. This is the thing that probably bugs me the most about Ed Ingram on the field. It's not the most impactful problem, but it's like it's the most annoying one. So Ed Ingram wants to finish. That is his primary goal. He wants to demoralize you and put you into the ground and inflict pain upon you, which is a fantastic trait for an offensive lineman to have on the field. It is a mean streak, but I kind of think it's a deliberate thing. It's a strategic move that is like, we are in a phone booth together, and by the end of it, I want you to want to go home and not want to play anymore. That's like the mentality. There is absolutely an attrition kind of toughness thing to that. And it's a very good trait for offensive. What you want your offensive lineman to be thinking like that. The thing is, he gets a little greedy about it, and that can lead to some losses. So, you know, there are plays where his job is very simple. It's just like a down block, not even a drive block where you're trying to move a guy, just a down block, and then somebody else is, you know, pulling around you or something like that, and all you've got to do is hit a guy and seal him off. You're not doing anything fancy. And in those cases, he can get to a place where he wins the rep. He outmuscles the guy. He has all the strength he needs to win that rep. And then what most linemen do is they will then take their stalemate. And if you, on a play like that, if you have stalemated him, you have won the rep. So take your damn stalemate. Ingram tries to finish the guy off and say, it's not good enough for me to stalemate you. I want to put you into the ground. Most of the time, very good trait, right? You want that mentality. You want, you know, play through the whistle and all that stuff. Finish very well. I was a huge critique I had of Darisaw coming out was that he didn't finish, and it was a big problem. And it's something that they ironed out in camp, and now he's a much improved player from what I thought he was in the draft, like because that issue is gone, and I'm very happy about it. Ingram tries to finish too much because what he'll do is when he's finishing you, he wants to get under you. He wants to basically get his weight out in front of him and push and like kind of launch into you. And that's a very powerful base to be. If you want to, you know, upend somebody and suplex them into the ground, that's how you start it, right? But you like totally lose all positioning. It's a pretty risky thing to do because now if your weight is out in front of your feet, it's really easy to counter you. It's really easy to like jujitsu your way over, do a swim move, just get out of the way or something like that. And you basically have no recovery ability if you don't do this successfully. And sometimes his pads will go so low that, and if like the other guy's pads aren't low with you, they can just sort of swipe past you and then suddenly they're free to go blow up the play. And he's lost reps because every defensive lineman has rehearsed and drilled and practiced, especially in the NFL. They have drilled what to do when the offensive lineman's weight gets out in front of his feet. Just like get up and try it. Get your weight out in front of your feet and see if you can then turn around and chase someone who just got past you. It's a very difficult thing to do. And very often, I mean, it's more common you'll see them just lose their balance entirely and just like fall over. It is a greedy move. We love the mentality. We love the tenacity. But maybe chill out on that one a little bit. It's ruins, you know, two reps a game, and a lot of times they're just like stupid run reps, and maybe they would have been ruined anyways. Like, the impact of it is a lot lower than the impact of something like getting his pad level down, or you know, giving him more lateral mobility on pass protection and stuff like that. But it's very annoying, and I really do think it could be fixed with a conversation. Like, you don't even need to practice anything else. Just literally kind of like, hey, Ed, chill on that, and then it can be fixed. And by all accounts, everybody says he's super coachable. I'm not really worried about that at all. But it's something that I would definitely want to like get out ahead of and fix, so that I could focus on some of the more substantial issues. In other contexts, it can be really good. Like, something O-line coaches preach is punish jumpers. This is a big Brandon Thorne thing. And I hear it from other coaches too. Punish jumpers. And what that means is, in pass protection, if the guy that you're blocking jumps up to try to swat the ball down, he now has absolutely no base. His feet are off the ground. Punish that dude. You hit him and you drive him into the ground if he's going to give himself up like that. Always punish jumpers. Make it hurt for them to do that, and that will discourage them from doing that. They'll be that much less willing to go try to bat the ball down if you can turf them when they do it. And boy, howdy, Ed Ingram loves punishing jumpers. It is his favorite thing to do. It's like just a free hit. But I think that's kind of how you need to get to know him, is as a guy that just relishes the violence. And a big, strong, mauling offensive lineman. Were it not for the off-field, this would absolutely be the kind of guard that we have been wanting for years and years and years of in Minnesota. This guy could not be any more different from the Pat Elflines and the Drew Samias and the Garrett Bradburys, who have all been too small to do stuff and end up on their ass and embarrassed and all that. This dude is the embarrasser. This dude makes you look like you do not belong on a football field. He makes you look 40 pounds heavier than you are. And honestly, by the end of the game, I wouldn't be surprised to hear those guys say that they believed it. That is who he is. And if he can put together some other stuff, I think he can win that starting job. I don't think there's a lot of assembly required for him to actually beat out the starting job, but I think that's more about his strength of competition. Like, Jesse Davis is like one of the most passive offensive linemen I've ever seen. This dude is all active. And if you're an O-line coach, you're choosing the active guy over the passive one every single time. I don't know what Chris Reed is going to do, if he's going to play center or whatever. He might not be in it. I think Oli Udoh's fairly easy to beat out in this competition, especially if he's still as holdy and grabby as he always was. I would heavily favor him to win that starting right guard job. I don't think he'll start with it, because rookies don't typically start on the first team, but I think he'll end the end camp with it. And I don't think he'll have too hard of a time doing that unless some of those technique issues and other things, you know, unless he can't get his pad level down, unless the lateral motion thing is a bigger problem than I think it is, you know, unless those things are worse than I saw in, or they got worse in camp or something like that, or unless they're going to try to change something about the way he plays that's super fundamental that requires total deconstruction. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if the coaches in Minnesota wanted to totally reconstruct the way that he sets for the pass. It's fine, but it's not great. And I wouldn't be surprised if they wanted to reconstruct it from scratch. That would be a thing that takes time. And then suddenly you're redshirting and you're in the Wyatt Davis hellhole. That's okay. That just might be something that they want to do. And it would be worth it in the long term to kind of take it slow, let them come along. And they'll all stay developing and they won't tell you anything about it. But sometimes that is, all right, we are going to teach you, forget everything you know about pass setting. We're teaching you the footwork from scratch. I wouldn't be surprised to see that, but if they don't do something like that, I think Ed Ingram can totally start, and it's just a matter of kind of tweaking this here and there to really get him to realize his full potential. I like his tape. I really do. I think he's a perfectly second-round guard, a little bit of a sketchy scheme fit. I like more than I dislike about his pass protection. I really like his run blocking and all that stuff. He seems to know what he's looking at and all that, and it's just little things here and there that if you can iron one or two of them out, I think you've got to do. Of course, that's not going to be at the forefront of anybody's mind when they think about Ed Ingram. I think that's totally fair. Again, read the article in the show notes if you want to get your head around that before you start talking about his fit in a wide zone and his pass protection technique and all that stuff. I get it. It's kind of awkward, but that is him. Tomorrow on the show is Twitter Tuesday. We're still doing those all summer, so get your questions in. You can send them to me at LukeBraunNFL on Twitter, at LockedOnVikings on Twitter. You can send emails to LockedOnVikingsPodcast@gmail.com, or you can always fill out the Google form in the show notes. I will see you all tomorrow. And as always, Skol.